The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, great first hour with Robert Bryce, and we've got Dr. Moti Nisani coming up to talk about direct democracy as humankind's last, best, and only hope. Phone lines are open, of course, and feel free to dial in. Numbers are at the top of TNTRadio.live. A lot of Russia news. Politico has posted an interesting piece discussing how Ukrainian forces are unlikely to be able to capture Crimea, or Krim, I think, as they say in Russian, from Russian troops in the near future, four senior Defense Department officials told House Armed Services Committee lawmakers in a classified briefing. I guess it's not so classified anymore. The assessment is sure to frustrate leaders in Kiev who consider taking the peninsula back one of their signature goals. So that's interesting that the Pentagon is saying now that Ukraine won't be able to take back Crimea. And, you know, I visited, I think it's 5-6 years ago, I went to Russia for 3 weeks with Sharon Tennyson's Center for Citizen Initiatives, great NGO, as part of a citizens diplomacy mission. We met with the late Gorbachev, who was invited to my graduation ceremony in 2009 at the Geneva School of Diplomacy. We hung out with Vladimir Posner, famed Russian media personality, and others. And we all went off to different places, us Americans on the trip. And I ended up going to Tatarstan and Kazan. And there we hung out with some Crimeans, and they were all saying that, you know, most of Crimea wanted to come back to Russia. So I thought I'd just share that personal experience of mine. And Putin has issued a warning to the West at the Stalingrad event, and he says, quote, "Unbelievable but true, we are once again threatened with German Leopard tanks with crosses on their hull, and once again seeking to battle Russia in Ukraine with the help of Hitler's followers, the Banderites. Those seeking to defeat Russia on the battlefield apparently do not realize that a modern war with Russia would be entirely different for them. We're not sending our tanks to their borders, yet we have something to respond with. And it would not be limited to armor use only. Everyone must realize that. And leave it up to one of my writers for geopolitics and empire, Serbian-based analyst Nikola Mikovic, who's been a guest on my TNT show. His comment on Putin's speech is very cynical. He says, Vladimir Putin, the king of empty threats. The West is already fighting a modern war against Russia, and Putin has clearly demonstrated that the Kremlin has nothing to respond with. So I like to listen always to both sides of the spectrum. I don't pretend to know exactly what's going on, and I can see events and things going in multiple directions. Often in history, there are surprises, black swans, and I've got no idea if Putin, you know, really going to send the nukes, or if Russia is projecting and it's weak. I don't really want to find out, though. Do you? I don't want to see, you know, that scenario from Terminator 3 where Skynet pushes the nuclear buttons in all countries and nukes just fly everywhere and destroy the planet. I don't want to find out. I'm not that curious. You know, curiosity killed the cat. And it's interesting, The Economist just posted that another frozen conflict is preferable to a never-ending war that puts Europe, Ukraine, and ultimately the world at risk for years to come. Velina Chakarova, interesting analyst, she says a frozen conflict will legitimize the illegal annexation of 17% of the Ukrainian territory that is geostrategically important because of the control over Black Sea ports and natural resources. It will help Russia replenish forces and prepare accordingly for the next phase of the war. So that was interesting. And as I mentioned in my hour with Robert, that German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is using a trip to Latin America to help Germany secure additional supplies of the lithium that car giants like Mercedes and Volkswagen need for their electric vehicle batteries. Chile is the world's second largest supplier of lithium after Australia. and much of its output is currently gobbled up by China. So there's now a fight for lithium, and we got some here in Mexico as well. And there's a lot of the other news today is all this hype about massive Chinese surveillance balloon hovering over the U.S. It's not really interesting. I mean, there's talks of shooting it down. I think it's just more U.S.-China war hype. We sent the U-2 spy plane to the Soviet Union. This just seems, I mean, I don't know. It's breaking, so it's hard to know what's really going on. But I think it just serves the purpose of egging on World War III. I guess we'll have to see what's, you know, it'll take a few days to really decipher what's going on with this balloon and in a Chinese balloon that was sighted in Montana, which had traveled from the Aleutian Islands, passing through Canada and landing in Montana. Is it the Chinese, you know, the reverse of the U-2 spy plane? Now it's the Chinese surveillance balloon. Is the U-2 named their band after the U-2 spy plane? So should someone start a band called Chinese Surveillance Balloon? A reminder that, again, if you ever miss any show or interview, you can always listen back into the archives. There's a particular guest you like. You can just, you know, search through and click on that guest. The episodes are at tntradio.live or on all the podcast platforms, you know, Apple, Podbean, Spotify, Google, Amazon, so forth. You don't have to miss out on anything on TNT Radio.
What matters to you?
They cover the important stories.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, in a recent interview, Russia's FM foreign minister Sergei Lavrov not only named exactly who he thinks the next Ukraine is, he also explained why. Who do you think is going to be the next Ukraine? Here with the full story, joining me once again is TNT Radio news producer Mr. Adam Clark, otherwise known as Ruckus.
Not to steal a line from one of your previous guests, but Mr. Ruckus Clark was my father. Just kidding. So yeah, this is I can't help but be reminded of certain terms that get bandied about sometimes in this space, like color revolution, regime change, things like that. But anyways, good old Sergei Lavrov. He is speaking about Moldova. He says they could follow in Ukraine's footsteps and become a new quote-unquote anti-Russia. He suggested this during an interview with Russian media. I forget who. I think it says here. It's the RIA. There you go. RIA Novosti and Rossiya 24 media outlets who published an interview with him today. The diplomat claimed that the West had installed a president in Chisinau who is hell-bent on bringing the former Soviet Republic into the U.S.-led fold. He was asked which country, in his opinion, could go down the same path as Ukraine and become an anti-Russia. The foreign minister responded by claiming the West was, quote, currently considering Moldova for this role, end quote. He said the country had been chosen primarily because the West succeeded in installing, quote, through some very peculiar methods, far from free and democratic ones, end quote, a pliant president at the helm there. Maya Sandu is, quote-unquote, rushing into NATO and, quote, has Romanian citizenship, Lavrov noted. The diplomat concluded that the Moldavian, I don't know how to pronounce this correctly, head of state is ready to merge her country with neighboring Romania and to, quote, do practically anything, end quote. Lavrov said the West and Moldova's leadership have effectively put on hold the normalization process regarding the breakaway region of Transnistria in the 5+2 format. This involves the U.S. and Russia, along with the United Nations and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, as well as Moldova and Transnistria. He claimed that the new Moldovan Moldovan government is no longer interested in the process and is considering retaking the region by force and booting Russian peacekeepers out of Transnistria. Late last month, President Sandu, speaking to Politico, said, quote, "There was a serious discussion underway in Chisinau about our capacity to defend ourselves, whether we can do it ourselves, or whether we should be part of a larger alliance," end quote. While she did not identify NATO directly, Sandu has consistently been pursuing pro-Western policies since coming to office back in 2020. Moldova was granted EU candidate status just last year. It has also been actively cooperating with NATO in recent years, sending its troops to participate in the military bloc's force in Kosovo. The Moldovan president held a meeting with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg in New York in September 2021, and the country's foreign minister attended a meeting of the organization in Romania last December. However, the outstanding issue of Transnistria precludes Moldova from becoming a member state of the U.S.-led organization, as NATO requires all aspiring entrants to resolve all territorial and ethnic disputes first. So there we have it. Do you think the situation that's been taking place in the background with Moldova echoes some of the things that took place not that long ago before this whole thing fell down and went down with Ukraine?
Most definitely. And I mean, I've been talking about for months now with, I think, some guests that we have the real danger. I mean, well, first off, of the Ukraine situation spilling over, you know, into Belarus, into Moldova, elsewhere. And then, you know, since the pandemic stuff, 2020, I've been comparing the time period that we're living in to the 1930s. We've got a whole host of things going on. We've got this, you know, eugenics program going on, otherwise known as the pandemic. You've got, you know, World War scenarios, economic collapse, the rise of tyrannies, and then this, you know, irredentism or borders, this push to rewrite borders, make new states, merge other states. I mean, all this stuff went on during the world wars, and it's usually when it's a world war scenario, this is when all this stuff happens, you know, when new countries form or unions. And so this talk of, I mean, it's pretty crazy, Moldova merging with Romania, and I don't get some of these officials of these Eastern European countries or whatever, like Moldova. And when I really look, I forget her name, for Belarus, she's like the Juan Guaido of Belarus, just total American puppet, Brussels puppet, Belarusian, that this lady who wants to, you know, overthrow Lukashenko, and this Belarusian lady to run Belarus. And it's like, what are you doing? I mean, all you're going to do is sell out your own country to the West, like a total traitor, an anti-patriot. Like, how do you look yourself in the mirror? And today in Croatia, just as an example, I was looking at Sinčić, this Croatian MEP, and he used to be a politician in Croatia, saying how Croatian lawmakers are rewriting rules that are going to allow foreign corporations and banks to take over our entire Croatian coast and have free reign for the next 50 years to do whatever they want. We're giving up our territorial sovereignty, and this is being done by Croatian politicians. So just you talking about, you know, this Moldovan, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, just to join the EU or what? And then the EU is going to tell you what to do? I mean, total traitors, these people. But I do foresee, I have a more apocalyptic and cynical view of where things are headed, and I do see this sort of stuff going to be going on.
Well, and, you know, the U.S. and other players in the West and this whole NATO thing, they're certainly, I'm just going to say, responsible for that. I mean, why doesn't everybody just stop? Why can't we just stop all of this garbage? But no, we got to forge ahead, onward, and forward, whatever. This is ridiculous. But there were a lot of telling things that Lavrov mentioned in this interview. Not that I speak Russian, but it would be interesting to catch the whole thing. But there were some highlights that have been printed up at RT, of course. You guys can go check that out. But there's a couple things I want to point out that he said. It sounds to me like he's really onto our shystiness, we'll just say. He said, Western nations want to cripple Russia with sanctions to bring about a quote-unquote decade of regression, referring to words of European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. But he said, quote, we are in the center of a geopolitical battle. There is no doubt about it, end quote. He went on to praise Russian soldiers for being heroes whose, quote, deeds are for the future of mankind, in which there will be no conditions for full U.S. hegemony, end quote. He also was saying how, explaining how the U.S., quote unquote, has subjugated European politicians, taking, quote, the last traces of independence from the EU. He also said that this kind of, quote unquote, democracy that they advocate boils down to, quote, a right for them to impose on others what democracy should look like, end quote. So, yeah, it really does, you know, for all, I'm not a big geopolitical guy, but when I look at it, I'm like, man, it really looks like us, the U.S., just running around forcing ourselves on everybody. And I'm like, well, that's not cool. I didn't vote for that, but I don't know, maybe it's just my opinion.
No, I mean, that's 20 years. This 20 years ago, that's what got me, was this American exceptionalism. And what makes me even more irritated is just average Americans who have this arrogant, know-it-all attitude, this sort of like smug laptop class that think they can tell the world what to do. And I think, you know, Putin, I still remember the New York Times op-ed that Putin wrote so many years ago, you can look it up. And he was talking about this. He says, no one is exceptional. We are all humans. We all live and die. We all end up in the same box, the king and the pawn, you know, that Italian proverb, together, we all end up as skeletons. Every human is worthy of dignity regardless. And so this exceptionalism is just, it's not cool. It's not cool at all. And you know, now it's American exceptionalism. You know, centuries ago used to be other empires, but yeah, that's how it is. Phone lines will be open, and I'll be talking to Dr. Moti Nisani, and it's good if you sort of keep questions relegated to the stuff we're talking about with our guest, and I'll be right back after this break.
TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Kerry, John Kerry, the climate envoy who got caught in 2018 flying a private jet to pick up an environmental climate award in Iceland, was asked by an environmental journalist, why are you flying private if you're here to pick up an environmental award? And Kerry's answer was, do you know how important I am? I can't fly commercial. My work is so important. I've got to be out there. So now, because of all the blowout from that interview, this is what Kerry is now claiming. This is John Kerry in Davos at the World Economic Forum Great Reset Summit.
How can you justify being here when you yourself take private jets? Can you answer that?
I fly commercial, exclusively.
What Kerry's really saying is, I fly commercially lately or right now. It doesn't mean he's not going to be regularly flying in private jets. Again, he probably means since like that new year. This was done about January 70, you know, 2 weeks into the new year. So yeah, he flies commercially exclusively given that in the new year. But you know, don't ask him about December of 2022 or something like that.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds. And they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The Creepy Line at SalemNow.com.
Thanks for listening to us. Now, we want to listen to you. Our lines are open from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right. I am joined by Dr. Moti Nisani. He was on the program with me sometime last year. I learned about his work through Kevin Barrett, who also does good work and has been a frequent guest on with me on TNT. And so Dr. Nisani holds degrees in philosophy, psychology, and genetics. He taught at the Interdisciplinary Studies Program in the Department of Biology at Wayne State University for 20 years, served as Fulbright Professor at the Department of English in Nepal. And his book, which is out now, I believe, is 8 Billion Cheers for Direct Democracy. Direct Democracy is Humankind's Last, Best, and Only Hope. You can download it for free, or I believe purchase it. The website is drnisani.net. That's drnisani.net. Welcome back to TNT, Dr. Nisani.
I'm very glad to be back, and I'm looking forward to a lively conversation.
Yeah, and you know, you've got another book that deals with assassinations, but we were discussing, and I'm of this mood as well, that we talk a lot about the nasty stuff, the problems, the false flag operations, all this stuff, and we should be maybe moving more towards solutions. People talk about building parallel societies, but as well resisting tyranny. And you've got this new book out discussing direct democracy. So I guess, is it available for people to purchase like on Amazon, or do they get it for free? How's that work?
Like you said in the introduction, first of all, it's a public domain book, because I want to reach as many people as I can, and I don't want money to stand in anyone's way of especially in poor countries that people cannot afford. So it's public domain group book. It's available now in my website. It's also available. Will be available in a couple of days in Amazon. It will be available in Scribd, in the usual places that one can get. But they right now, one can go to my website, drnisani.net. Okay. The point of the book, if I may just point out that kind of an introduction, is that we have to think about two things. Clearly, we are, as you just said 10 minutes ago, apocalypse is within sight on many, many, many fronts. We have the environment that is going to hell in a handbasket. We are killing each other. I mean, human beings all over the planet are killing each other for what? What if, for example, you were talking about the war in Ukraine? What it's all about? It's about, in my opinion, the fact that the United States and UK insist on controlling the entire world. We have hunger. The book chapter one describes all the horrors of living in an upside down world. For example, just one example from the book that taken from the literature is 500,000 children will go blind this year. 500, half a million children, and go blind, and that can be solved for the price of one Lamborghini. That's the kind of world we live in. We have homeless people. We have so many, poverty is going up. So all of that suggests that we need to go on cataloging what's going on, the horrors of living in an upside down world. number one. But beyond that, as you just said, we need to think, what can we do? One way is, how do we overthrow the governments that are controlling us today? But that's a subject for another time. And the second one, okay, what kind of a political system is worth fighting and dying for? And the answer that I give is direct democracy. Now, I want to make clear that what goes on by the name of democracy today has nothing to do with direct democracy. It's a euphemism. It's basically a lie. We do not, wherever we live, no one on earth lives in a democracy. It's simply not true. So what the book talks about is real democracy or direct democracy, which existed in the past and which exists now in some subnational groups. And now the question is, if one goes to theory, the basic point of the book, there are 2 points. One is interdisciplinary. I visit every discipline: anthropology, political science, ecology, to make the case for direct democracy. And the second point of the book, something that's never been done before, as far as I can tell, is empirical. I'm not trying to get to solve the problem, what's the best government, by simply reasoning. By theory, you can get anywhere you want, because the social sciences are not strong enough to really, like the natural sciences, to come up with a definite answer to anything. So my approach, the book approach, is empirical. I simply look at the historical and the contemporary record. I look at anthropology, cultural anthropology. I looked at ancient Athens. I look at Switzerland, which is an oligarchy, but enjoys a bit of direct democracy, and consequently is one of the happiest countries in the world. Then I look at contemporary examples. And again, what you see is the kind of a spider web, a web of many disciplines. I look at the contemporary examples of direct democracies. And just to give one example, is the Berlin Philharmonic. Now, the Berlin Philharmonic is, unlike any other orchestra in the world, is controlled by its own 128 musicians. They decide everything. And it so happened, it just, in all these cases, it happens that it's, according to many experts, it's the best orchestra in the world. So the freest orchestra in the world is also the best. The ancient Athens, it's the, without a doubt, I think everybody agrees that it's the contribution of the Athenians to world culture to have been phenomenal. Philosophy, architecture, science, astronomy, you go on and on and on. And again, like the Berlin Philharmonic, it's the one country that had direct democracy. It had many flaws, but for the citizen, for the male citizens, they were genuinely free. They controlled their country. So if we want to have a goal in front of us, where do we go from here? We just let go of oligarchies. We let go of dictatorship. We let go of all of them. That's where we should be striving to go, is direct democracy, where we, the people, are governing ourselves.
That all sounds great. We're going to have to pause here, Dr. Nassani, and go to our news break. We'll be right back.
We do have some big news.
Listen up.
Now, TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Officials in Moscow have rejected claims that Western powers could get away with sending fighter jets, such as the F-16, to Ukraine without escalating hostilities, with a spokeswoman for the Kremlin describing the suggestion as absurd. A recruitment officer at the Royal Air Force resigned after finding about 160 cases of positive discrimination against better qualified male white pilots. An ice storm has frozen areas from Tennessee to Texas, leading to almost 400,000 outages.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
And we are back with Dr. Motti Nisani discussing his brand new book, 8 Billion Cheers for Direct Democracy. Direct Democracy is Humankind's Last, Best, and Only Hope. You can get it. You can download the PDF for free from his website, drnisani.net. That's drnisani.net. It'll be available as well on Amazon if you want to do the Kindle thing. And I'm always happy I purchased my guests' books, value for value, and to support people doing good work. And just opening the PDF, I haven't had time to read this yet. It's going to take me a couple weeks. But just looking at the structure and the chapters and the topics, it's mind-blowing. And it looks absolutely fascinating. And going back to what you're talking about, direct democracy in Athens, a lot of people talk today about Switzerland. And then, as you said, there are no democracies anymore. We saw that with COVID, clearly. All governments just threw the constitutions out the window and did, whatever the transnational corporations and IT companies told them to do in Davos, whatever. So we've got plutocracies, oligarchies controlling all of our countries. How would we begin, Professor Nisani, to that transition then from this tyrannical oligarchies that we are under to start to transition to direct democracy?
That's a very difficult question. The oligarchs that control the world today are very clever, and they are not about to let go of their power. You talked about Russia before. That is what's happening in Russia. The Russians are not a democracy, but they want to strike their own path. And you can see what they provoke war. By now, according to Colonel McGregor, 150,000 Ukrainians died. They don't care. They went to, for the same reason, on false pretenses, they went to Iraq. They are impoverishing the majority of people in the United States. You are right now in Mexico. They are putting pressure on Mexico to continue the war on drugs, which is useless. So they are not going to let go of their power just because we want to. Demonstrations, we have tried them for not since COVID. We've tried them since in the United States, since the Shale Rebellion. The United States has never been, I discuss it in chapter 5 of the book, relying on many, many scholarly sources. The United States has never been a democracy. The United States is the American Constitution is a clever hoax to make sure that democracy never, that was the whole point of the, so the United States, and Jimmy Carter said 20 years ago, I think, that the United States is an oligarchy. The great Eugene Debs said 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago, while he was in prison for not wanting to go to war, he said, they tell us that we live in a great free republics, that our institutions are democratic, that we are a free and self-governing people. Now he says, this is too much, even for a joke. That is the reality. You can go back to Aristotle. Aristotle said that representative democracy is, by definition, an oligarchy. He didn't say it exactly in these words. What we have, and you can see it on so many levels. I mean, the people always want one thing. The people didn't want to go to Iraq. The people don't want to get cancer from glyphosate Roundup. The people want to protect their health. I mean, it's clearly, but their wishes, if despite the propaganda, the people very often, the American people, and I think it applies to the French people, it applies to the Serbian people, Croatian people, whoever it is, the people somehow they want to do what's right or at least serve their own interests. Why die in cancer when it's not necessary to die in cancer? So we now, how do we do it? I don't think demonstration will work. I don't think piecemeal. I don't think writing to you to representative works. If you want to know my honest opinion, we have to scale to make life uncomfortable for the oligarchs themselves. Only they are bullies, and the only language they know is the language of force. And the great folk singer, I love folk singing, Yuta Phillips says, the people who are destroying the planet right now have addresses. We have somehow, we have to forget about the little people. We have somehow to remember the people. It's a small clique, the Rockefeller, the Rothschilds, and their lieutenants, only lieutenants, Bill Gates, people like that. These are the people we have to focus our attention on if we want to get anywhere. But the focus of my book, that's the answer to your question. We have to let go, demonstration. You know what happened to the Occupy movement? It was a waste. You know, all these people are demonstrating or voting. It's a joke. We don't have, we have regular elections. We don't have, and beside which, all the information sources, how many people listen to TNT radio, Kevin Bird? Not too many. The majority, for some strange reason, are captivated by CNN or Fox or Democracy Now, or all this that belong to the oligarchs. So the answer is, first of all, we have to think about some kind of a strategic revolution. That's my answer. That's the only way we are ever going to. We have tried demonstrations, we've tried marches, we've tried everything, and we are still not only standing still since the American Revolution took place, but we are going backwards. The world is becoming, it's terrible what's going on right now, as we said before. Now, and then the point of the book, we cannot just like chickens with the head cut off or sheep that have lost their lambs. We are crying. We have to be to ask ourselves, what kind of system do you want? And I try to provide. I'm not the only one. There are others, but I try to provide a holistic, comprehensive defense, an empirical, historical defense of direct democracy, trying to convince people that that is the only, as the subtitle of the book says, that's our only hope for a better world. And the biggest handicap that people have with that kind of thinking, or that kind of a project, people somehow reject the notion that they should govern themselves. We have been indoctrinated for 2,000 years, more than 2,000 years, since the 2,300 years since the demise of the Athenian state by Macedonian tyrants. Since that demise, we have been brainwashed to believe that no, we cannot govern ourselves, but that's a lie. We can. And we did. The empirical record showed that we can do it. And we have to overcome. Many people that I talked to, I had some responses from friends and from other people to that. And some people talk about, no, like one person, no, I believe in monarchy. Really? You prefer somebody to lord it over you than to you lord it over yourself? You preferred slavery to freedom? And look at the historical record. Look, which monarch do you want? Napoleon? Is that the guy you want? You were Sun King, the Louis XIV, who says, after me, the deluge? That was his philosophy. That is the philosophy of all ruling classes. They don't look after us. That's the historical. So if the book has to make some kind of inroads, people have to consider it to let go of the belief that Plato and Thucydides were right, that democracy is for the birds. We have been brainwashed. Plato was a rich aristocrat, and he looked at Sparta. Sparta was, as Bertrand Russell says, a model in miniature of the country that Hitler won would exist. Sparta was a fascist, Nazi, but Plato and Thucydides preferred Sparta, fascist Sparta, where people were so miserable, so unhappy, and so powerless, to Athens, where people were free, happy, and ruling themselves. That is the biggest handicap that we have, because we've been told over and over and over again that Plato's philosophy of the philosopher king is it. That Thucydides, who believed that the oligarchy, a bloody oligarchy in Athens, was the best form of government that ever was, who eulogized Sparta. So I hope I answered the question, but also I want to emphasize, one has to read, to look at the subject with kind of let go of preconception and look at the record and ask yourself, who do you want to control you? Dr. Kissinger, Dr. Wolfowitz, Dr. Brzezinski, or you? That is the choice that we have to. How to get there, it'll be in chapter 9 of the book, I outline what appears to me as the best way of implementing Athenian democracy today. It's not that simple, because nowadays, we have to, apart from implementing, we have to eliminate information control of the oligarchs. We can't let them brainwash us. We have got to take over the information. We cannot allow banking. We have to make banking a public utility. We cannot allow sunshine bribery. That is what campaign financing is. Mm-hmm. We have 500, as Michael Moore says. Yes.
Yeah, Dr. Nocina, we're going to have to jump to a break. I just wanted to add what you were saying. I think you're really getting at something, that one of the ways to do this is to make the oligarchs feel uncomfortable. And we've seen that we have to pull our money from their businesses, from their companies. We've seen Disney collapse, Netflix and others suffer problems. So one easy way is start forming our own parallel structures and totally disengage from them at all levels. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you talk about bullies. In one of my previous workplaces, I dealt with psychopathic, you know, narcissists and sociopaths. And these were people from the Anglosphere, New Zealand and the US, total bullies.
Yeah.
And they only understand bully language. There's absolutely nothing else. And you have to put your foot down, get in their face. And then I won. Those people were trying, they were getting other people fired. And I ended up getting them fired because I called them out for the things that they were doing. And that's what we have to do. And that takes courage. A lot of people, there's a lot of cowardice. And so we got to draw the red lines, put our foots down, and start pushing back against these crazy bullies, pulling our money, as you said, making them feel uncomfortable, non-violently, of course, because violence will only give them the pretext then to have their way with us. And again, we'll be right back after this break.
De-weaponizing weather
with reality and perspective.
What is baffling to me is how the meteorological community of the world, knowing what different sea surface temperature profiles can do, the relationship between warm sea surface temperatures in one place and cool in another, and the hemispheric pattern, be it the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere, why is it there's not more curiosity about this? Now, I'm looking at the sea surface temperatures right now, and of course, they're considerably warmer than 30 years ago. And I wish I could show you, but it is boiling warm southeast of Africa, southeast of Australia, right around New Zealand. That's got to be record warm water right around New Zealand, southeast of South America. Now, what is causing that type of warm water in those areas? Is it some kind of magic CO2 ferry? And why is the warm water in these areas? Why doesn't the CO2 ferry put it someplace else? These are very, very puzzling questions. I would hope that the meteorological community would take a look at these sea surface temperatures and ask themselves that. This is TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Papa, why can't we telegraph while riding a horse?
Son, there ain't no one to blame but Jeffro. He was riding old Betsy the Stallion, tip-tapping away at his telegraph, when blam, ran right into the side of the saloon.
Well, if Jeffro can't do it, neither should you. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back on our final segment with Dr. Moti Nisani. You can dial in and ask us a question. Phone numbers are at the top of TNT Radio Live. And you can download for free his excellent new book, 8 Billion Cheers for Direct Democracy, from his website, drnisani.net. That's drnissani.net. It'll be on Amazon in a few days. Just on that final thought, we were talking about making the oligarchs feel uncomfortable. Just today, I came across a clip from the Unwokeable podcast was it Matt Strickland? In any case, he went up against the government and he said that the only thing that politicians answer to is political pressure. And I forget the reason, but he said so many people backed him. And if it wasn't for the backing, he wouldn't have won against the government. He forced one political candidate to drop out of the race. And so I think this is what you're talking about, political pressure. And, getting back in your book, I did want to mention, I'm seeing in one of the chapters you talk about, under Athenian democracy, welfare and public ownership of resources. Now, I'm not a communist, I'm not a socialist, but I'm a Mexican. It's 5 years since I became a Mexican, and here the public utilities are owned by the government, and I only pay $5, $10 a month for electricity and water, which I think is great. I don't see that as a bad thing. I don't necessarily see that as a communist thing. You know, if there's a decentralized approach, the government shouldn't own everything, but maybe certain core public utilities, why not? So I thought that was an interesting part of your book. Further thoughts on Switzerland, or you also talk about pillars of American democracy. You know, what are some other key points from your book?
Well, to begin with, Athens was a capitalist place, but not capitalism, phony capitalism that is exercised in the United States, where the capitalists control the government and therefore they get whatever they want. Athens was the genuine Adam Smith type of capitalist society. But at the same time, there were the government, the people, again, remember, it's not government, it's the people. The people, certain resources were public. I also, if I may, just want to briefly touch upon the wonderful comment you made before about psychopath. Yes, what happens in contemporary societies that the psychopaths have tremendous advantage. They are the ones who are willing in corporations everywhere. They are the ones who are willing to stab. They have no scruples whatsoever. They are willing to stab anybody that stands in the way or even kill. So our system is built in such a way that we really live in a reign of the psychopath. They are at the higher you go in corporation, the higher you go in government, the more, I mean, who would agree to serve in Congress? Well, they know that they are betraying the people. Every congressman, couple of exceptions, but every congressman or congresswoman is betraying the people. They get money from Bill Gates or whoever it is, and they proceed to betrayals. To do something like that, you have to be without principle. Now, the point is that is exactly one of the strengths of direct democracy. For example, hunter-gatherers, okay? Most of our existence, you want me to give you a few examples. Let's talk about hunter-gatherers. Most of our existence, way over 90%, 95% of human existence was in tribes, hunter-gatherer tribes. Now, here's a miracle. You go to Tasmania, or you go to Siberia, or you go to North America, or you go to wherever you go, all of them, and that's a point that all cultural anthropologists agree, all of them, or just about all of them, were direct democracies. All of them were direct democracies. And now, how did they, to go back to the theme, they were all equal, they did not have chiefs. One famous article in cultural anthropology by Marvin Harris, it's called Life Without Chiefs. Everybody was the chief. The tribe made decision collectively. It was direct democracy. These people, they had many, many flaws, but they were happy. And one of the tricks that they had is exactly preventing the ascent of freeloaders and psychopaths. How did they prevent it? Well, they're not as choosy as we are. They believed that sometimes violence is necessary. They tried everything they could to warn a psychopath, a freeloader, or anybody like that, a psychopath, somebody who tried to boss around his fellow tribesmen. They tried everything they could to stop them from that behavior. If that did not work, that typically they would, one of the relatives of that miscreant would come at night and kill him. That's how they protected the direct democracy. This is simply, I think it's chapters 3 of my book, Documents. It's simply based on the work of cultural anthropologists. So that is one example of the direct democracy in action. For most of our existence, we lived in a direct democracy. People have to internalize it. The oligarchies, the tyrannies, the kingdoms, it's all, if anybody look at Marvin Harris says, if everybody would come to Earth 20,000 years ago, 30,000 years ago, 40,000 years ago, he would say that freedom and direct democracy is the natural conditions of human beings. What we have with the tyrannies and the kingdoms and all that, it's an aberration. Now, you wanted to know a little bit about Switzerland. Do we have more time, or we are?
We got about 3 minutes left, and you know, anything else you want to cover? And I, you know, one final question I had that was just, I thought it was interesting because I've interviewed Andreas Bummel of Democracy Without Borders, and there are people pushing this idea of direct democracy at the world government level, at the supranational level, like they want to create a UN parliamentary assembly to reform the UN. So, I mean, any opinion if that would work, or, you know, any final thought? We got about two minutes left, two and a half.
Well, that's the opinion that is promoted by our Buckminster Fuller, the famous for his domes, very interesting man. He believes that we can do it on a global level. I believe that would work, that anything away from where we are now would work. We'll save us from extinction, we'll save us from poverty, hunger, and so many bad things right now. My personal opinion is no. I believe that decentralization is a key to correct functioning. I think that small is beautiful, and that we have to follow the Athenian model. I would, as chapter 9 argues, I would divide any country to small 40,000 villages, which will be autonomous to the greatest extent possible. I would give the central government almost no pulse. And again, following the Athenian model and following the Swiss model. That's one of the secrets of Switzerland. Switzerland is an oligarchy, as I said. But one of its strengths, it is decentralized. So I think decentralization is important. But let me emphasize again, anything, any move on any level towards direct democracy will be a wonder, a miracle worth fighting for.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think we're all huge fans of decentralization in any shape and form. So thank you for coming back on again, Dr. Moti Nisani. You're welcome back anytime. The book is 8 Billion Cheers for Direct Democracy. People can download it for free, PDF, at drnisani.net. That's drnissani.net. Or it'll be on Amazon in a couple of days if you want the paperback or the Kindle, where you can just purchase it and get it straight to your Kindle. Thank you again, Dr. Nisani.
Thank you.
All right, I'm signing off, but keep on rocking in the not-so-free world here on TNT Radio.